What you are about to hear is the first major radio interview that I ever did. It happened in March of 1995. I was 19 years old and got the opportunity to interview Peter Wolfe, who donated his time to my college radio station, WERS FM 88.9 in Boston, a broadcast service of Emerson College. Haven't said that in a long time. Every year we did Live Music Week, which was a full week of live music to raise money for the radio station. As a non-commercial station, this was the only way that WERS could fund itself. So Peter Wolfe donated his time, his talent, to helping us and to supporting my little radio show, which aired on Sunday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m., called The Soul Bucket. A couple of semesters after this, The Soul Bucket would be moved to Saturday evenings and get a huge audience. But back in the very beginnings, when Peter Wolfe donated his time, my show was on Sunday mornings. So I hope you enjoy this. A very green Matt the Cat. Well, I was Matt the Swinging Cat back then. A very green Matt the Swinging Cat interviewing the legendary Peter Wolfe. Hello, Boston. You're listening to 88.9 FM WERS. This is Matt the Swinging Cat, host of The Soul Bucket. And this week we have a very, very, very important guest in with us, the legendary Peter Wolfe, founder of the Jay Giles Band, the original Bad Boys from Boston. And before we get started, I'm going to leave you in suspense for a little while before we start rapping with Pete. We're going to go into one of his biggest records, going way, way back with this one. It's a live version of Looking for Love on 88.9 WERS. WERS. You're listening to The Soul Bucket, and this is Matt the Swinging Cat. We have got live in the studio the original Bad Boy from Boston, the man who stole some love. He's looking for love. He's cruising for love. He's got love-itis, and it won't let him go. So trust me, baby. I'll tell you what you need to know live in the studio, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Peter Wolfe.
Hey, how you doing there, Matt? Make your knees freeze, your bladders in you. It's got to come out. That's what rock and roll is all about. Doing the tune and getting right through it, having some fun and on the run.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, biscuit down and get me done.
So how you been?
I've been doing okay. I really appreciate you inviting me down here.
Oh, no problem.
And because for a while when I first got to Boston, I used to be a disc jockey over across the pond there, across the river at another station. And actually, MIT radio station in days was called WTBS before Ted Turner bought the rights to it. And it used to come around Emerson, too, early on, because that's really where you only got the good music when I first came up to Boston, because I came up from New York via Wisconsin, via Chicago, to study painting at the Boston Museum School. Mm-hmm. And I was just music hungry. And there wasn't FM radio really didn't have any rock and roll. I had a lot of classical or easy listening stuff, mostly easy listening, and so college radio was the only thing that had it. So it's good to be back in the shack.
We appreciate you coming into the studio and helping us with Live Music Week. That's very generous of you.
Right. The other day we came in. I came in with some friends, and we did a bunch of acoustic stuff from the solo period, last couple of solo albums, and that was a lot of fun. It's a great studio down there.
Thank you very much. That studio is you work. You tore the roof off that studio, man.
Oh, thank you.
You shook the walls and rattled the doors in that studio. We should mention that coming up on April 7th, speaking of acoustic, you have a big, big live acoustic show at the Middle East on April 7th. Tickets, I believe, are $8.
Right. Yeah, there's two shows. The first show is, I think, at 8:30, and it's 19 plus. And the second show is 11:30, and it's a upstairs, intimate, small room. You know, sit down, candlelight, sit around smoking goas and chatting with, you know, chatting. We're going to be playing a whole lot of new things from the upcoming album that should be out, hopefully, in the late spring. Oh. And
we've been waiting for a long time for that one, man. Let me tell you.
Oh, not as long as I. let me tell you. But really, thank you for again for mentioning that. And I look forward to seeing all the old Giles fans and new fans. And please come over. Middle East is a great place. It's over there in Central Square, and it's a very music friendly place. A lot going on.
Definitely. And speaking of newer stuff, why don't we take a cut off one of your last album? Actually, it was your last album, Up to No Good. And so.
Yeah, this was a solo record. I did it down in Nashville. It's funny because I was traveling around working with different writers, and I'd work with like Lamont Dozier, who worked with Holland Dozier in Holland and wrote a lot of the songs for the
Motown.
Motown, Four Tops, and Supremes. And it was a fellow that did some work with Stevie Winwood, Higher Love, and did a lot of work with B.B. King. And he was down in Nashville. I figured I'd look him up. And went down there and ended up staying there for a while because I just met so many incredible musicians, from people like George Jones and Chet Atkins to Don Penn, and you know, a lot of great writers. And so this is an album I did down there. We stayed up, do a lot of bourbon drinking, riding around on a one-ton pickup truck. And this is Baby, Whatever You Do, Be Up to No Good.
WERS, the man who was born being up to no good. We're here live in the studio with Peter Wolf.
Hey, how you doing, Matt?
I'm still doing fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm just getting caught up in all the equipment here. It's interesting. So pardon me for browsing.
It's a small studio.
No, it's okay. It's not the size of the ship that gets you seasick. It's the motion of the ocean. Remember that. Gentlemen, remember that. Ladies, you remember that too.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it ain't what you do, it's how you do it.
Ain't what you play, but how you play it.
Yeah, ain't what you say, but how you say it.
Ain't what you into, but how you into it.
Ain't what you cook, but how you cook it.
Well, why don't we go back to the early days?
Okay.
I my memory, man, just thinking about it, I remember a couple of years ago, I was reading the Rolling Stone Rock and Roll Almanac, and you wrote the introduction to that. And I remember that the whole part about the introduction that stood out in my mind was, you talked about growing up in the Bronx and everything, and how you'd go into the black neighborhoods to find the soul R&B records for your collection. You'd like dig through old piles of records. You remember?
Well, I know there was a couple of introductions I did for Rolling Stone at one time, and I'm not sure there was a book of lists and there was this and that. I'm not sure which came out how. But I grew up in the Bronx, and it was the same neighborhood, right near the neighborhood of Dion and the Belmonts. And for people, the movie The Bronx Tale pretty much captured.
I gotta tell you, I just sorry to interrupt you.
Oh,
here,
it's okay.
Man. That ranks of my top five favorite movies, because Robert De Niro is like the best.
No, it was.
Have you ever met Robert De Niro?
Yes, I have. I met Robert De Niro, and it was pretty much like when I met Frank Sinatra.
Oh.
And
kind of cold.
No.
No.
No. Sinatra said to me, "Hi, kid." No, we met at one of these actually, he was having, not to name drop, but it was out in L.A., and he was having dinner with Dustin Hoffman. And I was with someone else that was a mutual friend, and we were having one too many. We all ended up at this, it was at the Palm restaurant. They were all eating steaks, and I was drinking. They were eating. I was drinking. They were eating. I was drinking. and someone mentioned, hey, let's go up to the Playboy Mansion. He goes, hey, Pete, you ever been up there? I said, can't say I have. And so we all drove up there.
De Niro said this to you?
No. Oh. This was...
Dustin?
No, it wasn't Dustin. This was... Ryan O'Neill, who was part of them. So this crew rolls up to the Playboy Mansion out in L.A. And it's like what you expect. And there was all these...
The bunnies?
Yeah, the bunnies and these ladies all walking around. Sort of these cats all dressed up in waiter uniforms. You know, would you like an hors d'oeuvre? And then it was like Hugh is showing a movie. So everyone's going into this room, the screening room, because Hugh's showing this movie and... there he is, and Hugh Downs comes out with his bathrobe and, you know, hot babe on his arm, and, you know, hey, man, how you doing? And he was very, hey, Peter, wow. Pleasure, you know, welcome to the Playboy Mansion. It's nice to be here, yak, yak, yak. Now, prior to that, I had been drinking. I'd been up for 2 days because he came in from the West Coast, East Coast, and the Giles Band, we'd been touring, and we used to play pretty hard. So I hadn't slept in about 48 hours, and they had these, like, comfortable chairs. And so they're sitting down, and he said, why don't you come sit down next to me? And I said, sure, Mr. Hefner. And he said, oh, call me you, you know, one of these friendly guys. So I was sitting down, and the movie that they were playing, were screening, or he was screening, was a movie called The Hindenburg with George C. Scott.
I'm familiar with that.
Which, wide awake with 9 hours sleep, could be one of the most boring, laborious movies that one would have to sit through. With no sleep for 2 days, all of a sudden... Next thing I remember is somebody sort of like touching my shoulder, and I wake up, and there's standing over me, Hugh Hefner, saying, Pete, you know, you've been asleep for about 5 hours. I just want to let you know that your ride's leaving. And apparently, I went out right as the movie started. So I don't remember too much about the Playboy penthouse. But in answer to your question, no, I really don't know Robert De Niro that well.
But you were hanging with Hugh Hefner.
Yeah, I was hanging with you.
Great.
And then, you know, of course, I was up there several times after that, because when the Giles had that big song, Centerfold, that was the Playboy national anthem for a while. So it was sort of like every time we would appear in every major city, the Playboy Club at that time, they had the Playboy Clubs would send bunnies down to come on stage with us and dance during Centerfold. So, yeah.
So you had a good time.
Had a good time. No, I had a good sleep. So that's a good time.
Yeah. So about your collecting records back in the Bronx.
Oh, yeah. So Bronx Tale. So.
Did you like the movie?
I liked the movie very much, especially that it was, first of all, it was a one-act play. And I thought De Niro did a fantastic job, being that it was his first directorial debut. And I thought it was very good, and I even enjoyed the whole neighborhood. It captured the neighborhood, and it was funny because Dion the Belmonts, who grew up right in that neighborhood, played in Boston last summer, and I went down to see him because it's sort of, you know, pay respects to some of the important influences, and he was told me that De Niro flew him out to L.A. and spent like a week or two with him, having him just reminisce about things in the house and went on and used some of that in the movie. And I really enjoyed the movie, and I also enjoyed the aspects of the racial aspects in the movie, because it, you know, back in the late 50s and 60s, it was pretty intense. I mean, Boston here still has these very strong neighborhood lines where you have Southie and Roxbury and
North End
and Brookline or whatever. And obviously it's far better than it was, but, you know, it's still a whole lot of silliness that, you know, hopefully will in time wear out.
Definitely.
But in record hunting, I lived in the Bronx, but I went to high school at this place called High School of Music and Art, and I was studying painting. And the High School of Music and Art was right outside of the City College uptown campus in Harlem. So it was on 135th Street. Mm-hmm. And so to get to the subway, where I would have to go every day back to the Bronx, I'd walk right through the heart of Harlem. And I'd always pass the Apollo Theater. So every Wednesday, I'd go to the Apollo Theater and see all the great show reviews, like B.B. King's and the Blues Shows and Otis Redding and Jackie Wilson and Billy Stewart. And
oh, man.
And but what was great, Matt, is you'd go in and you'd pay like something like $3 and you'd see two movies, Amateur Night on Wednesday, plus the entire review, whoever would be there.
For $3?
Yeah.
For everything?
Yeah, everything. And it was incredible. And there was a couple of great record stores right next to the Apollo. And I would go in and be a lot of old 45s. And the way I heard a lot of records was just by hanging in these record stores. And at these particular shops, someone would come in and say, "Hey, man, you got any new blues thing?" He goes, "Yeah, we got something just came in the other day. Let me hear it." And that's how they'd sell it, you know, because people would play it in the store. And guys say, "Yeah, I like it." And he goes, "Nah, man, that's too slow." And then play, "Oh, I like that beat. Give me that." You know, and so by hanging out for an hour or two, you were able to hear a lot of the great records. And there was a fellow in Boston, still has a shop in Central Square, but he had a great shop called Skippy White. And he was located in Washington Street, right across from a club called Louis Lounge, where I used to see Otis Redding and B.B. King. And it was a small little club. But you'd hang out at Skippy's. And, man, I heard some great stuff. Matter of fact, this next record we got queued up was something I bought at Skippy White's. This next record is one of the records I used to pick up. I had kicking around. It's kind of scratchy, but I just love the sound of it. And this is by Lil Walter. He used to play harmonica with Muddy Waters. The flip side has I'd love to play, but it's all scratch because, you know, it would skip a lot. But it has Bo Diddley on the flip side playing with Lil Walter. But this is Lil Walter with "Baby, It's Too Late."